So we began the second parak yesterday,
yes. And
we saw the Gemara on the Mishnah about Chaya, Behema, Ophos, and that was on Daf Chaf Aleph, Omid Aleph. Now, let's just review the opening of the Mishnah, the opening line of the Mishnah, because I want to just add something in order to clarify. It says, Kol Shah Shemuto Lechol Machil, etc. And the question here is, what's the chiddush? What's the chiddush of this Mishnah? I mean, obviously, if you're allowed to eat it, and it's not also the Torah's Chomei, it's for Achilas Adam, then for sure, you'd be allowed to feed your animal. If you can eat it yourself, then with a kolshken, you're allowed to feed it to your animal. So what, therefore, is the chiddush of this Mishnah? And the answer is that in this case, the Mishnah is indicating the flip side, just the reverse. That when you're not allowed to eat it, then you're not allowed to feed it to your animal. And that's coming lafuke to exclude a possibility that although you're not allowed to eat it, you're allowed to feed it to your animal. Which is true, both according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Both Tanoim agree that there's a period of time which is Asur b'achila but mutar l'achila behemto. That's called the fifth hour. So let's say according to Rabbi Yehuda holds that in the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat chametz, but you're allowed to feed it to your animal. Our Mishnah is coming lafuke to exclude Rabbi Yehuda, because our Mishnah is assuming that whenever you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to feed it to your animal. That's not true according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we have the fifth hour. In the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to feed it to your animal. Now, by process of elimination, therefore, we would assume our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Meir, and that's exactly what the Gemara wants to suggest. But the Gemara rejects that, and the Gemara interprets the Mishnah as a reflection of the Shita of Rabban Gamliel, because Rabban Gamliel holds that there's a difference between Kohanim, as we discussed at great length, and Yisraelim. A Kohen is allowed to eat the Trumas Chametz in the fifth hour. Correct? And a non-Kohen, we'll call him a Zar, is not allowed to eat Chametz of Chulin in the fifth hour. So we have the fifth hour according to Rabbi Gamliel. And although according to Rabbi Gamliel, you and I don't mean you, Don, I mean me and Gershon and Reuven, I don't know, Reuven's also not a Kohen, right, as far as I know, last time we checked. So we're not Kohenim, so we're not allowed to eat chametz of Chulin during that fifth hour. But yet you, Don, would be allowed to eat Truma, even though it's chametz, during the fifth hour. That's the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel. And therefore, when the Mishnah says Kol Shoshe Mutter, Mutter means that it's Mutter for a Kohen, is Machil Behemel Chayla Ofus. Meaning, in the fifth hour, when according to Rabbi Gamliel, we allow the Kohen to eat Trumas Chametz, that's the hour where we're allowed to feed our animals. So that's this Mishnah reflecting the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel. Now, what we're up to is the bottom of the Omer. If you count up four lines before the bottom of the page, you will see a discussion here about Mochro Lenochri. Now, I'm just curious here. How many people in this room have the minig of selling their chametz to a guy before Pesach? Not you, Reuven? You also? Oh, so it's unanimous. We all sell our chametz to a guy. And therefore the Gemara asks the following, Pshita, why did the Mishnah have to go out of its way to point out that you're allowed to sell your chametz to a guy? And the Torah says you're not allowed to possess your own chametz, but here you sold it to a guy. Why would I think? Why would the thought cross my mind that you would not be allowed to sell it to a guy? That's the Gemara's pshita.
Amen.
So the Gemara answers, Lafuki mehai tana. Our Mishnah is coming to exclude the shita of Beit Shammai. And to our surprise, we're going to find out that Beit Shammai, and he's originally quoted in Masechta Shabbos, made gzeira, you're not allowed to sell your chametz to a guy. Now again, Rabbi will say, don't get nervous about it. We don't paskin like Beit Shammai. And even Beit Shammai, under certain circumstances, will allow you to sell your chametz to a guy. But in most cases, Beit Shammai will not accept mechira legoy lenochri as an option. You have many options of getting rid of your chametz. You can get rid of your chametz in many different ways. You can eat up all your chametz before the Shas Isuro. You can feed it to your animals. You can burn it. You could crumble it and throw it into the wind. You know, many different options. But the option of selling it to a guy is not a valid option according to Beit Shammai. And we're going to try to study why. Why does Beit Shammai oppose what we know as the common custom amongst Jews that we sell our chametz to a guy? He says, "Disanya Beit Shammai omrim lo yimkar adam chemtzo lenochri." Before Pesach, a person should not sell his chametz to a guy. Ella im kain. Here's the one exception to the rule that Beit Shammai himself recognizes and permits selling the chametz to a guy is yodea bo. He knows if, as far as this chametz that he's selling, sheyichle, it will be eaten kodem haPesach, that the guy will consume the chametz before Pesach. You know, we're talking about perishable objects. We're talking about food that has a certain shelf life. And if you sell it in advance of that shelf life in such a way that you can guarantee that the chametz will be completely consumed before Pesach, then and only then will Beit Shammai permit you to sell it to a guy.
Talk?
So he's saying the following. That here we have a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, which is a classic, right? And our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, which only mentions the shita of Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel omrim kol shosh mutal lechol mutal limkar. Whenever you're allowed to eat chametz, you're allowed to sell chametz to a guy. And according to Beis Hillel, it could very well be, I'm not sure, this is the Chiddush of the Meiri, that when you sell your chametz to a guy, you fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisa. The Torah says, get rid of your chametz. This is another option for getting rid of your chametz. Now, the Mefarshim say that what the Meiri has in mind is not that the mechira per se is considered tashbisa, but that the guy is going to eat the chametz. And when the guy eats the chametz, that's a fulfillment of tashbisa. The chametz is consumed, it's destroyed. And here the Yachronim are very perplexed. Well, we have a principle called Ein Shlichus Li'akum, that the Torah recognizes agency, but not in the case of a guy. A guy cannot be an agent for you to effectuate a kinyan or anything of that sort. So how is it that when the guy to whom you sold the chametz eats the chametz, that's going to be a mitzvah of tashbisu, as if to say he's your representative, there's no agency of a guy? So the Mishnah Berurah tries to explain this, and he says that if the beer chametz is going to happen through the consumption of the chametz by the guy, that's not considered shlichus. That doesn't require agency. All you have to do is set up the chametz in a way that you know it's going to be destroyed. Who actually does the destruction and how it gets destroyed is irrelevant. So in this case, the guy is sort of vicariously eating up the chametz, consuming the chametz and destroying it, not because he's my agent. In other words, the mitzvah is not the maisa biur, you know, the act of eating it. The mitzvah is that the chametz be consumed, be destroyed. And that's what the guy is facilitating. It's happening through the agency of a guy. For example, let's say I had chametz and I want to get rid of it before the Shas Iser, and I would, instead of throwing it into the fire, I would feed it to my dog. And the dog consumes the chametz. That also would be another form of tashbis. It's no worse than throwing it into the Red Sea, if you follow my point. And that's called the mitzvah of biur. But according to Beit Shammai, we're not going to rely on the fact that you sold the chametz to a guy. We don't want selling chametz to a guy. And the question is, why not? So we have here three different opinions. Rashi's opinion, we have the opinion of the Ramban, and we have the opinion of Rabbeinu Peretz. So let's go through the three opinions as to why Beit Shammai prohibit you from selling chametz to a guy. According to Rashi Shita, Dibra Maskil Kodem, Rashi says that, you know what is the problem, the objection of Beit Shammai? You have, as a Jew, owning chametz, a mitzvah of destroying your chametz. And that means that a certain moment in time, called the Shas Isur, we'll call it Erev Pesach midday, although it's a little earlier than that because we require Srefa on the sixth hour, right, 11 o'clock. But in any event, at that moment, you have to destroy your chametz. If you sell the chametz to a guy, could very well be that at some point down the line he'll consume the chametz, but it will not be consumed by the moment of Iser chametz, the moment of Tashbis. So if you recall back on Daf Heyom and Aleph, we had a principle called Ach Chilek. Do you recall that? Again, it's been a while since we did that, but what it means is that when the Torah says Ach Bayom Arishon Tashbisu, it means that you take the 14th of Nisan, Ach, and you divide it into two halves. And at the midpoint, that's when the chametz has to be destroyed. Now, when you sell it to a guy, then although the guy will eventually consume the chametz, but there's no reason to assume that it's going to be consumed by that moment in time. And the Torah wants to make sure that you fulfill your mitzvah, that it should be consumed by that moment in time. On the other hand, Beit Shammai will agree that if you sell it early enough before Pesach, and it's a perishable food, right, how long can chametz last? Or, for example, you have every reason to assume that chametz is eaten at a certain pace, a certain rate, you know, every day they eat one loaf or so. So you can assume the guy will eat the chametz. You sold it to him a week before Pesach, and he's going to consume it by Pesach. If that's a fair assumption, then Beit Shammai will hold that that's okay. Correct? And that was the language of Beit Shammai. Look at it again. Elim Kein Yodea Bo Sheyichle Kodem HaPesach. He knows, and he has every right to know, that the chametz will be destroyed, be consumed by Pesach. But if, on the other hand, he doesn't know that the chametz will be consumed before Pesach, you know, maybe the guy is going to freeze the chametz, then he has not fulfilled his mitzvah tashbisu, because the Torah says, ach, and when is the mitzvah tashbisu fulfilled? What do you say, Gershon? When is ach, chilek? Halfway through what day? The 14th of Nisan. So on the 14th of Nisan, we split the day into two parts. And by midday, you have to have gotten rid of your chametz. If you sell the guy your chametz a day before Pesach, there's no reason ostensibly to assume that he's going to consume the chametz by Pesach. So therefore, you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah of tashbis. So far, so good. That's Rashi's interpretation of Beit Shammai. Rabbeinu Peretz raises, he goes ballistic here. This doesn't make any sense. What chametz am I required to destroy when the Torah says tashbisu? Correct. It has to be my chametz. If I sold the chametz to a guy, then it's his chametz. I don't have any mitzvah tashbisu. How could Rashi postulate that I have been mevatel my mitzvah? I have not fulfilled right, it's non-compliance with the obligation of Srefa of beer chametz on chametz that belongs to a guy. And we know, for example, it says in the Torah, lo yiroa lecha chametz, shelcha yatoroa, the Gemara says back on Daf Hey, ava toroa shel acherim. You can see a guy's chametz. Technically, if a guy comes into my living room with chametz on Pesach, I don't have to worry about that. The Gemara says I should make a mechitza because, you know, I might get confused and I might come to eat it. But there's no bal yiroa by matzah, a violation of possession of chametz if it belongs to the guy. So what are you telling me? That according to Beit Shammai, we do not fulfill our mitzvah tashbisu because we don't know that the guy is going to consume the chametz before Ach Chilek, the midday on the 14th. Who cares? What difference does it make? It's his chametz. I don't have to worry about his chametz. We entered into a valid sale, and we signed the contract, and legally it's his chametz. If the halacha recognizes that kinyan, and there's no reason why not, then I don't have a mitzvah tashbisu.
Beit Shammai doesn't hold by nachir chametz either. What's worse than making hefir and
that's an excellent question. According to Beit Shammai, what difference it make whether I sell it to a guy or I make it hefker? If Beit Shammai requires that the chametz be absolutely destroyed, then even if I make it hefker, it's not destroyed. And on the contrary, I would say that selling it to a guy is even better than hefker. Why? Because in a case of selling it to a guy, it's not only ownerless, but it's owned by the guy. And that should certainly... but no, Beit Shammai says that we want to get rid of the chametz before Pesach. Well, if you mafkir it, then the same halacha should apply. According to Beit Shammai, you're not getting rid of the chametz, it's not being destroyed before Pesach.
I'm not following this particular line of reason. If it's not mine when I sell it to the goy, then what would Beit Shammai's objection be?
That's what we're trying to figure out. Rashi says the objection is because he didn't destroy the chametz, and you have no way of knowing that the goy is going to consume the chametz for Pesach. So Rabbeinu Peretz asks, why do I have to be worried about consuming and destroying the chametz when it's owned by a goy? It's a goy's chametz. Okay. Can you imagine we're going to go on a crusade and destroy all the chametz in town? You know, every guy who owns chametz, there's no chiyuv of tashbisu on chametz that belongs to a guy. The mitzvah tashbisu is on chametz that belongs to a Jew. But now I've sold it to the guy. It's a valid sale. Why would Beit Shammai object? This is Rabbeinu Peretz. I'll read to you some of the language. For Rabbeinu Peretz, Tama al Pirish Rashi, Harei Kevon Shemachar Chametz Lenachri, Shuv Eino Over Olav. Kimosha Shanidu Li El Ain Over Bivayural Chametz Biyad HaNochri. So what is going on over here? How could Rashi tell us in the context of Beit Shammai that the guy is not going to consume the chametz before Pesach? He owns the chametz. If the guy owns the chametz, then I don't violate Bayurah Bayimatzeh. What could possibly be the objection of Beit Shammai to selling the chametz to a guy? That's the question that Rabbeinu Peretz asks on Rashi. Now, I would say the following. Just, I'm making an attempt to defend Rashi, because the question here, the objection against Rashi, is very, very severe. You know, it's very sharp. Perhaps Rashi holds that according to Beit Shammai, when we get close to Pesach, meaning the Shas Bir, the requirement to Bir, Tashbisu, is at Chatzos, midday on the 14th, as soon as I get close to that period of time, the Torah looks at that chametz that's in my possession and says, get rid of it. The Torah says, don't sell it, but destroy it. Why? Because there's a fundamental difference between selling to a guy and destroying the chametz. The Torah says tashbisu. And tashbisu means you've got to destroy it. And that applies when you own the chametz. If you sell the chametz, then you've basically circumvented the mitzvah of tashbisu. You sidestepped. Is there such a phrase? Sidestepped? You've sidestepped the mitzvah of tashbisu. Why? Because it's no longer your chametz. So Rashi holds that in Beit Shammai's frame of reference, at one point in time, there's like a clincher, a critical moment, where the Torah says, wait a minute, you own this chametz? Destroy it. Tashbisu. selling it to a guy is a way of avoiding the mitzvah of tashbisu, but it doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu. You've just simply avoided because you've given it over to the guy, and now you're saying, well, my hands are clean, it's not my chametz. The Torah says, destroy the chametz.
Yeah, but if you say I happen to be a vegan who never eats any chametz whatsoever,
right,
what obligation do I have to destroy anything I eat?
Do you own the chametz? Well, you don't own it?
No, I don't own it, I don't eat it.
Ah, so it could be that if you don't own any chametz, then there's no mitzvah tashbisu. The Torah doesn't say that you have to go out and buy chametz. But at some point in time, we'll call it time TX. You know, at that moment in time, you own the chametz, the Torah clamps upon you a chiv to destroy that chametz.
So what
is that point? So that's what I don't know. The intuitive answer to that question, but I don't think it's correct, would be with the inception of Yudalit, meaning when the stars come out on the 14th of Nisan, at that time it's already considered Ach Bayom HaRishon. Again, it's not Ach in the sense of Chilek, but it's Bayom HaRishon. So the Torah says, Bayom HaRishon, you're already involved in destroying the chametz. What's the first thing that we do towards the goal of destroying chametz with nightfall of the 14th?
B'dika.
Maybe what the Torah is saying is, at this moment in time, with the inception of Yudalid, you're chayv in tashbisu. And right now, urgently, get involved in B'dika. And after the B'dika, bless you, the B'dika should culminate in beer and destroying the chametz. Then now you want to sell the chametz to a guy? Technically you could do so, and Enoch Inami, the Torah, would recognize the validity of such a sale, but you've circumvented the mitzvah of tashbisu. And there's a chalos in the heftza of the chametz, at that moment of the chametz, so to speak, cries out, I have to be destroyed, because of the mitzvah of tashbisu. It could be then, now getting back to your question, Don, that maybe I would be obligated, if I don't own chametz, to buy chametz. Well, what we're saying is no. You own the chametz? Nobody asked you to buy the chametz, but you own the chametz. You're not this, you're not that, you're not a vegan or whatever it is. And the Torah clamps down on this chametz, a chiyuv gavra, that you have to destroy that chametz. No longer does the Torah give you the option of circumventing the mitzvah of tashbisu once the mitzvah of tashbisu is chal on the chametz. Now, the reason I hesitate, and I'm honest with you, I give myself an A for effort because I'm really empathizing with Rashi against Rabbeinu Peretz, but I don't think it's correct. I'll tell you why. Because Beit Shammai seem to assume that the only time I'm going to allow you to sell chametz to a guy is if you allow for a period of time such that you can guarantee yourself the chametz will be consumed. Let's assume, again, I'm just throwing out a number here, it would take 30 days until the chametz will be consumed. The Gemara on the next Amud is going to talk about a substance called kutach habavli. It was a kind of mixture of bread and cheese that they used as a dip. And the Gemara says that it has a shelf life of 30 days. So I'm just throwing out the number 30 right now. You enter into this period of time of 30 days, and Beit Shammai says it's not going to be eaten up because the chametz will last more than 30 days, and therefore you're not allowed to sell to a guy. Well, that undermines my entire thesis. Why? Because I said that the chiyuv is chal on this chefetz to destroy it on the 14th of Nisan. This is almost a full month prior to the 14th of Nisan. So here I want to quote to you the Gemara that we had on Daf, where was it? Hey or Vav, I don't remember exactly. It was called Hayotze Bishayara. Do you remember that Gemara? A person is going on a cruise, let's say. He's leaving his house. And the question is, does he have to destroy his chametz before he leaves his house? And what was the answer to that, right? For some people, it's very relevant. So what was anybody remember what the secret number was? It depends on one number. Number was 30, right. That if he leaves his house before 30 days, and he has no intention of coming back to his house for Pesach, he's on a very long cruise, then he doesn't have to destroy his chametz. He just does bittul, and that's it. But if within a 30-day period, he's already past Shushan Purim, then he has to do a bedikah before he leaves on his trip. It seems, therefore, that there's a chiyuv of destroying your chametz that begins 30 days before the chag. And the Gemara establishes this based on halacha, which is called Sholim V'Darshin B'Hilchas HaChag Shloshim Yom Kodem L'Chag. 30 days before the chag, we have to start learning the halachas of Pesach. In other words, the awareness of chametz, perhaps we could say the shame chametz, emerges 30 days before the chag. And at that point, Beit Shammai say, get rid of your chametz. If you're leaving the house, be bodek and destroy the chametz. And even if you're staying within the house, but you should not be selling it to a guy. Reuven, you want to say something before? Okay, so that's Rashi. And as I said before, Rabbeinu Peretz is very upset with Rashi. Now we get to the Ramban. The Ramban says that Beit Shammai should not be understood from the perspective, as Rashi has it, of the mitzvah of Tashbisu, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa, but rather we should understand Beit Shammai from the perspective of a d'rabbanon, what we call a gzera d'rabbanon, or a harchoka mid'rabbanon. Now, what is the nature of this harchoka that the Rabbanon instituted, according to Beit Shammai, prohibiting you from selling your chametz to a guy? So the Ramban says that Rabbanon chashashu leha'arama. Okay, let me write that word on the board here. Ha'arama. Now, it's hard to translate the word ha'arama. We'll call it a legal fiction. And let me try to explain what I mean by a legal fiction. Imagine if I... Two scenarios, okay? And we're going to compare and contrast them. Scenario number one is I say to Paul, right? Paul Jones, you know, he's a guy. I say to him, you know what? Hold on to this chametz for me for 7 days. I got a beautiful bottle of whiskey. It's worth hundreds of dollars. And it's... You know, it's chametz. I'm a religious Jew. I don't have to explain to him all the laws. He doesn't know much. But hold on to this. I deposit it in his cellar. And I say, don't drink that whiskey. I want it back at the end of Pesach. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is, I sell him the chametz. And I say to him, or at least in my mind, in a week from now, I'm going to buy it back from you. You know, let's put down $10 on the table. Now, $10, that's a good deal. You know, you Jews are famous for getting good deals, and now you're selling it for $10? What kind of smart Jew are you, right? And the answer is, I just want a legal fiction. I want you to buy this chametz, and don't even dream of drinking it. I'm going to give you back $10, and maybe even I'll give you a little chuparity. I'll throw in another couple of bucks for providing me with this service. But basically, although the second scenario is technically different than the first, but in reality, who are we fooling? It's really the same. I'm basically telling the guy, even in the second scenario, I'm depositing my chametz. I expect to get it back in a week. That's called harama. And what that means is that we don't believe, at least Beit Shammai is very suspicious, that it was das machne. Okay, now das machne is the absolute prerequisite for any transaction. Das machne means if you put a gun to my head and force me to sell something, that sale is not valid. Again, I don't have much choice because I'd rather live than you know, even have to part with something. But the das machne is not a full-fledged das machne. Here also, says Beit Shammai, if this sale to a guy is really a haroma, and you intend to buy back the chametz from the guy, when I say buy back, I mean in quotation marks, you know, buy back the chametz after Pesach. This is haroma. You never really had das machne. Did you really want to sell your whiskey for $10 when the whiskey is worth $250? Who are you fooling? So in your heart of hearts, you were really saying, Mr. John Paul Jones, you know, just hold on to my chametz. I'm going to get it back to you. The whole sale was a fiction. This is the Ramban's understanding of Beit Shammai. It means that Beis Hillel says, look, technically, the sale is valid. Nobody coerced him to enter into this sale. The Jew sold his chametz. He got paid for it. There's a shtar, there's a document. You know, we covered all our bases. It's a legally binding transaction. Therefore, there's no problem about your Rabbi Yimutz. It's not your chametz. You don't own it, and you don't violate. Beit Shammai says, no. This is not a valid transaction. Or it might not be a valid transaction. It may get it. It's only a suspicion. But Beit Shammai says, I don't really believe that he had das mach, that he really, really meant to sell. Now, again, I can multiply. I can tell you that he sold an entire geschäft, a cellar full of whiskey that's worth thousands of dollars, and he got $10 for it. At what point, says Beit Shammai, do we finally admit that this whole thing is a hoax? This thing is a fig leaf, it's haram, it's a legal fiction, but really, he has no das machna, the kinyan is not valid. Says Beit Shammai, you're playing with fire over here. I don't mean the fire of Tashbisu, of burning the hope, but I mean to say you're playing with a very dangerous game here. The Torah has two lavim that you violate if you own chametz. And now you're saying, well, I sold it to a guy. Give it a break. Did you really sell it to the guy? So that's the Ramban's shita in Beit Shammai. So again, whereas Beis Hillel say, look, technically, legally, it's a binding kinyan. And by the way, when you sell chametz, very often the rabbi will say to you the following, that the guy has rights to come to pick up the chametz. And the reason why the rabbi wants to say that to you is because he wants to guarantee that you have an absolute binding das machna. You don't think this whole thing is just a hoax because, you know, the rabbi wants you to give him a gift for Pesach. You know what I'm saying?
But under these circumstances,
I guess you don't know what I'm saying because you live in Israel. But in America, the excuse to give a gift for the rabbi to recognize all that he did for you the whole year round is to give him something when he sells the chametz. Gersh, is that not so? I don't know. California, you didn't have that experience. In Brooklyn, New York, I mean, that was it. You know, you give the rabbi some bucks. You know,
really?
No, because during the year, it's embarrassing. You know, to give the rabbi, doesn't want to take a gift from you. In Toronto, there was a different meeting. You know, what was the day in the whole year that they recognized the rabbi and gave him a gift? Was Purim. A strange meeting. I never saw it in America. But in Toronto, I saw it. This gentleman, I'm just thinking of one individual, he comes in with his mishloach manos, a bottle of wine and a piece of cake, and he slips me $400. I said to him, Yechiel, what's this all about? He says, Rabbi, you don't know that we recognize the rabbi once a year on Purim? So that was a Canadian meeting. In America, I only saw it on at Mechiris Conference.
I wonder all the rabbis want to go to Canada.
Right.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So in light of what you just said, does that mean, another question slipped out of my head, does that mean that Beit Shammai, if it was a real sale, if you know it's a real sale with Das Machna, then that's okay?
I think that Beit Shammai are going to apply the rule called lo plug, meaning we're not going to go into specifics. You know, lo plug means, okay, this is not working for me, but lo plug means that we make an absolute ironclad rule. You know, if we're worried about cases of harama, then we're not going to say, well, you know, Ruve, when he sold his chametz, he didn't really mean it. Shimon really meant it, you know. It's all Dvar Shevalev, you know, it's all totally in what he felt in his heart. So we're not going to, you know, we're not going to, you know, differentiate. Now we have Rabbeinu Peretz. You remember that Rabbeinu Peretz was the one who attacked Rashi, and he has another pshat in Beit Shammai. And he says the following, that there's a concept called chashad. Do you remember this concept? We've discussed it in the past. Again, this is not working too well, so I don't know if you'll see this. Chashad. Bet shin dal. Can anybody here tell me what chashad means? Correct. Chashad means when you do something and people are wondering, they suspect you of some hanky-panky. Like, I'll give you an example. When we learned Hanukkah here, you may remember that if you have a house that's located on two streets, you should light a Ner Chanukah on both streets, so that if somebody goes down this avenue and he doesn't see that you lit a Chanukah, he doesn't know that on the other avenue you lit Chanukah candles, and therefore he suspects you. That's based on a pasuk v'yisem nekiyim, that a person always has to be known. Says Rabbeinu Peretz, chametz, believe it or not, again this is sociological, but maybe we'll find, maybe you gentlemen will give me a parallel in contemporary life. Chametz has a shame. Shame meaning people know that this is your chametz. Now, I don't know, does it have your name on it? You know, you buy a loaf of Arnold's, white bread, you know, and it says Burzon on it. Like, what's the shot? But let's grant that it has some sort of a connection to you. Now you sell it to a guy. Says Beit Shammai, you know what? Jewish people see your chametz in the possession of a guy. They don't know that you sold it to him. The sale may be valid and binding at this level of Rabbeinu Peretz. We're not with the Ramban. But you know what? They're going to suspect that there was no sale whatsoever. That the guy is just simply holding on to your chametz. It's a deposit. It's not a sale. It's a pikadon and not a mechira. So I'll read to you the language of Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbeinu Peretz says the following. Gozru mipnei hachashad. According to Beit Shammai, they prohibited the sale of chametz because of chashad. Sale to a goy, right? Me'achar v'hoya hachametz zeshal Yisrael. It was the Jew's possession before he sold it. V'gam nikarbo. Nikarbo means there's some obvious sign. Haroshem. Again, Roshem means like a seal, so to speak. Not the animal seal, you know, not that mammal. Shahoya shel Yisrael. The Yomru, the spectators will think, Shu hifkid eschemtso biyad hanochri. He simply deposited it, the Achra Pesach Yitlenu. And guess what? What happens after Pesach? He gets back his chametz. And that he's not allowed to do. So again, there are two halachas here. One halacha is that I'm not allowed to deposit my chametz in the possession of a goy, because I still own it. And there's another halacha that I can sell it to a goy, but the onlooker, the spectator, doesn't know whether I actually sold it or I just deposited it. It was just a mafkin pikadon situation. And Beit Shammai is worried that since people see that chametz and they know it belonged to you, meaning to the Jew, they assume that you were trying to, you know, beat the law, so to speak, and you just put it down in his cellar, in the guy's cellar. You really didn't sign any sort of binding document and enter into a full-fledged sale. Now, what does this mean that it's nikar? So I suspect that sociologically, they used to have certain types of chametz. I don't know if it was whiskey, or maybe it was just the way the Jewish bakers baked bread, that you could see that it was Jewish produce. I'll give you an example. Again, don't quote me on this, because I'm not allowed to say this publicly, but when I was in what's called Barcelona, they told me that in a certain bakery, they bake challahs for the Jews on Thursday or whatever day of the week it was, and they told me where to find it. Now, the rabbi gave his hechsher. It was a little bit of a flimsy kind of situation because, you know, in the same store, they were selling all sorts of baked goods. But somehow, again, I don't know exactly how he would oversee the baking process. Maybe they had a special oven in the back for these challahs. But you could definitely see that those were challahs. They didn't look like anything else that the Spaniards were eating. I'm just using that with Saberta Ozen. I'm giving you an example. It could be that there were certain kinds of whiskeys that were obviously produced by Jews or sold and circulated amongst the Jews. I don't know.
Maybe the jugs. Yeah,
excellent, maybe the containers. I didn't even think that. You know, today in contemporary life, Yeah, everything is manufactured. You know, there's so little home-baked stuff. No, it could be possible that even today there's certain pitot, maybe, I don't know, in America. I mean, goyim also eat pitot, but maybe there's certain pitot that look Jewish. I don't know. The premise of Rabbeinu Peretz is that there's something called chometz sherishumo nikar. That there's a chosem, there's like a seal, so to speak, on the chometz. This belongs to a Jew. Now, what is this guy doing with the Jew's chometz? Well, you and I know the truth. He bought the chometz, and there was a valid sale. Beit Shammai says, well, that's not what people are going to think. Well, not necessarily what they might think that he just simply deposited his chometz. He brought a bag of chometz, you know, and he said to the guy, you know, do me a favor, you know, put it away from me. You know, I do favors for you, you do favors for me. We have a good neighborly relationship. So that's called chashod. Now, what happens if you sell your chametz to a guy early enough so that the chametz will be consumed by the guy before Pesach? Then Beit Shammai allow it. And that works out according to everybody. According to Rashi, it means you sold it to the guy 31 days before Pesach. So you're not yet chayev in destroying the chametz. There's no mitzvah tashbisu. According to the Ramban, if the same logic applies to Rabbeinu Peretz, there's no reason for Gzeirah D'Rabbanan here of Harama or Chashada, because the chametz is gone, you know, before Pesach. So no one can say, well, you know, you circumvented the law and you gave it over to the good. So let's take a look now at the Gemara on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer. Now, what we're going to try to figure out is, where does Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira fit into the picture? We said that Beit Shammai are not going to recognize this option of selling chametz to a guy. Beis Hillel validate the sale and you avoid any violation of Bal Yerov by Yomatzu. Where does Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira fit in? Omer, he says, kutach. Again, kutach is a kind of a cheese that has breadcrumbs in it, real chametz, in a mixture. And that's called pirure lechem. I know, did your wife ever send you to the supermarket and ask you to pick up pirure lechem? No? Okay, anyway, it's called breadcrumbs. Now, if you know anyone who has celiac and they only eat what's it called? Gluten-free. So there are pirure lechem, which are gluten-free. They're not real lechem. So you'll have to ask your wife which pirure lechem she wants you to pick up. Anyway, they mix this cheese with pirure lechem, and that's called kutach. V'chol mine kutach. Now, there's many different types of kutach. There's something called kutach habavli. The Babylonians made it with their kind of recipe. And there were other countries. Each country had its own flavor of kutach. And it was sold on the market. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, Asur limkar, you can't sell it to a guy, shloshim yom kodem lepesach. Once you hit Shushan Purim, you're not allowed to sell kutach habavli to a guy. Why? Because kutach habavli is something that has a relatively long shelf life. In other words, it's not eaten up quickly. Why? Because it's only used for tibu, for dipping. It's a dip. So things that are eaten as such, they won't last too long. But something that's used only as a dip, it won't be eaten before Pesach because it lasts as long as 30 days. Now, basically, if Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is invalidating the sale of kutach and kol mini kutach, even though you're selling it to a guy, whose camp does he belong to? Beit Shammai or Beis Hillel? Beit Shammai. He certainly belongs to Beit Shammai's camp. And what he's basically saying is that I hold like Beit Shammai, a person has to guarantee that the chametz will be consumed, will be destroyed before Pesach. and at the time of the Shas Isur, that chametz doesn't exist. Therefore, says Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, don't sell kutach, because it's definitely going to be in the world, it'll be existing by the Shas Isur, because the guy is not going to consume it, because the kutach habavli lasts for a long time. Now, why the Shloshim Yom? Is it purely coincidental? And this would fit into our perspective that the Gemara says back on the Vav that Sholim V'Darshim Vilchus HaPesach, that we begin learning the laws of Pesach 30 days before the Pesach. So again, let's just get back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Umochro l'nachri. So we ask, what was the Chiddush of our Mishnah? Obviously, you're allowed to sell your chametz to a Nachri. And the answer is that this Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah reflecting Beis Hillel, because Beit Shammai, and for that matter, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, would not allow you to sell your chametz to a guy unless you can be guaranteed it'll be consumed by Pesach. Now we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mutar b'hanot, that a person is allowed to benefit from his chametz during this hour when you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to benefit from it. Well, that's a repetition, that's redundant, because the Mishnah opens up by saying, Kol shosh mutar lechol, machil lebehema lechay leofu, mochil lenofri. So if you're allowed to feed your dog, then, and you're allowed to sell it to a guy, then you're getting benefit from it. Why then did you have to add the two words umutar b'hanot? What is the Mishnah coming to add here by the words umutar b'hanot? Pshita. Says Gemara, it's simple. If you're allowed to feed your dog and you're allowed to sell it to a guy, that means hanot, you're benefiting from the chametz. Why did the Mishnah have to repeat itself and say mutar b'hanot? Lo tzricha. The Mishnah wants to tell me a chiddush. And that's called charcho. So I'd like you to write down the word charcho. Okay, charcho. Charcho means, that's a verb, and what he did was he put the chametz into the fire and it got scorched. It's not totally burnt. It doesn't look like chametz anymore because it's, you know, it's. Have you ever had this with toast? I mean, who never had it with toast? I mean, you know, usually what happens is in the next room over, they're yelling fire. You know, they're already calling up the fire engine because they smell the burning toast, right? But you're there next to the toast and, they, you know, it's okay. It got a little burnt, but it's still toast. So Rashi identifies this concept of charcho as batel ta'amo umarehu. It means that it no longer tastes like chametz because it's burnt. It no longer looks like chametz for the same reason. And therefore, the Mishnah wants to say that you're allowed to benefit from this chametz. Why? Because you burnt the chametz. Again, when I say burnt the chametz, it didn't go up in smoke. It's not totally burnt. But it doesn't look like chametz. It doesn't taste like chametz. You wouldn't want to eat it because it's, you'll get black pieces caught between your teeth. And that's what the Mishnah wants to tell me. That in the case of charcho, you're allowed to have hanor from the chametz, even though it's real chametz. But you took this real chametz, and you put a, well, what do they call it? That thing that they use, you know, a spit, not a spit. What's it called? A piercing knife, you know, and you held it over the fire and you scorched it. Now, when did this happen? When did you scorch the chametz? So the Gemara says, kodem zmano. Do you see those two words? What that means is that you're allowed to take chametz and scorch it and then benefit from it as long as you enter into that process before zman iser achilas chametz. So let's say the zman iser chametz is the fifth hour. The fourth hour, correct? Let's say it's 9:30 a.m. on the 14th of Nisan. You took the chametz and you scorched it. You took a piece of toast and you put the toaster on number 5. That's a no-no, right? So it's on number 5. It gets scorched. The kamashmalon kid of Rav, and the Mishnah wants to tell us the chiddush of Rav. Rav rules the following principle. The Omar Rav, charcho kodem zmano, mutar b'hanot afilu li'achar zmano. that if before the fifth hour, let's say in the fourth hour at 9:30 a.m., 9 o'clock a.m., you did this process of charicha, and you scorched the chametz, then you're allowed to benefit from this chametz in any way, in any shape, any form, even to eat it, after the Zman Isur chametz. And the reason that's allowed is because charcho is mevatel tamo umar ehu, and therefore it's not chametz. It doesn't look like chametz, it doesn't taste like chametz, and it's not chametz. But now we have to ask the following question. And this is a question that challenged the minds of the greats throughout the generations. Why can't he do this on Pesach itself? Or after the Shas Isur? Do you follow the question? If you're telling me that since it was burnt and scorched, therefore it's batel taimo umareu, it doesn't look like or taste like chametz, and you're allowed to benefit from it because it's not chametz, then what difference to make when you did this? Whether you did it before the Zman Isur at the 9 a.m. on Erev Pesach, or you did it after the Shas Isur at 12 p.m. Whenever you did it, you did it. It's no longer chametz, and therefore you should be allowed to have hanah from it. Why does Rava make a stipulation that charcho is mutter only if it was charcho kodem zman, before the Zman Isur?
Because it would be chametz if you did it afterwards.
Oh, so someone is saying that if you waited until the Shas Isur, then at this point you're in violation of possession of chametz, and now we're going to say to you, we're not going to allow you to benefit from this and burn the chametz in a way of charcho. I'll read it to you in the name of the Ran. He says the following: Isur hanah shel chametz shenechrach li'achar zman isuro, hu mishum knas. Does anybody know what the word knas means? A penalty, a fine, right? We're going to penalize him. Why? Because he had no right to keep this chametz until after the Shas Isur. And by delaying the process of destroying the chametz, he has violated the prohibition of shehiyas chametz, of maintaining possession over on his chametz beyond that moment of time. So what's going on here is that we're talking about a rabbinic prohibition, which is called a knas. On a doraisa level, according to Torah law, the way the Ran formulates it, and that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins it, you would be allowed on a doraisa level to benefit from this chametz because it's no longer chametz. It was batel mareu v'taima. But the Rabbanan said, we're not going to allow this because we want to penalize you for violating the Isur of Shehiyas Chametz.
I have a question.
Just one more line. The Prima Gadim and the Chazon Ish, they maintain that this Isur Hanah, in the case of Charcho L'Achar Zmano, is the Oraisa. And as far as the Chovas Bir is concerned, if he was Charcho after Zman HaIsur, he's got to destroy that chametz. He's not allowed to benefit from the chametz. Why? Because you're already in the period of time of Tashbisu. You're holding on to this chametz after Chatzos, you know, after midday. And now the Torah says destroy it. If you're going to have benefit from it, then you're not going to be mekayim your mitzvah of Tashbisu. Yeah.
I'm not sure why we're even having this discussion in the Gemara, because it seems to me,
you're not blaming me for it.
No, of course not.
Just wanted to make sure. You know.
No, we're discussing what's here, right?
Right.
Because at Zman, right, yeah, you're not allowed to possess it. It has to be destroyed or not in your possession at that particular time. So if you have it and scorch it afterwards, why are we even discussing that?
It's no longer chametz. So let's say you violated
it. Was chametz at the time.
No, I understand. So we'll give you a patch. You know, we'll give you 39 lashes for owning the chametz. But Lamaisa, what do I have in front of me now? I have a scorched piece of chametz. It's like ofar bialma. It's like the dust on the earth. It's not chametz. It's batel taimo, batel marisa. Why can't I benefit from that chametz? Again, you want to tell me that I violated Isur? Okay, so give me patch. You'll tar and feather me for violating that Isur. But what does that have to do with the fact that I went ahead and I burnt the chametz? Now I can enjoy the benefit of this burnt chametz. So the answer is we're going to penalize you. because we don't penalize you. You're going to play hanky. You're going to play games with us. You're going to tell me, oh yeah, you know what? I'll destroy the chametz a little bit after the Zmana Isur, and then I'm okay. So we want to make sure that you don't benefit from delaying and violating the Isur Shiyas chametz. We're going to say, if you do so, we're not going to allow you to benefit from this chametz, even though it's burnt, even though it's no longer chametz. It's like he offered the ara. Now, how do I know if it's burnt? Charcho is ki offered the ara, from the fact that Rava says that if you did this before Pesach, you could enjoy that chametz even on Pesach itself. It must be ipso facto that it's no longer chametz. Now the Mishnah goes on and says the following. This is on the third line of the Mishnah. Avar zmano asur bahana asur. Once the zman of Isur Chametz passes, then you're not allowed to benefit from it. So the Gemara says, Pshita. We know that Chametz is asur bahana. Is the Mishnah coming to tell me something new over here? The whole Mishnah is predicated on the fact that Chametz is asur bahana. You're not allowed to benefit from Chametz. You can't feed it to your dog. You can't sell it to a guy once it's the Shas Isur. Well, we were talking about whether you could benefit from it before the Shas Isur. That's one thing. But why did the Mishnah have to go out on a limb to say, Avar Zmano, Asur Bano, Asur Pshita? So the Gemara answers, Lo Tzricha Lishaos Dirabanan. Okay, now, this line in the Gemara, Lo Tzricha L'shos D'Rabbanan, is relatively easy. I'm going to have an easy time here. But you're going to have to pay me an extra salary to explain the next line in the Gemara. So let me just explain the simple part of the Gemara. And that is, Sha'os D'Rabbanan. The issue is as follows. D'Rabbanan said that chametz is asur even earlier than the Torah. 1 hour earlier, that's Rabbi Meir. 2 hours earlier, that's Rabbi Yehuda. But what are we worried about? We're worried about a mistake. We're worried about a confusion, a margin of error, as we spoke about. A cloudy day, doesn't know where the sun is, blah, blah, blah. We had a whole long discussion about the mistake and what causes that mistake. But maybe the Rabbanan are only concerned and suspicious about Achilas Chametz. Now, does anybody know what is the violation of Achilas Chametz? What kind of punishment do you get for that? Kares. It's a very severe issue. But Hanamina Chametz, although that's also, and the Torah prohibits it absolutely, and there's no flexibility here, but it's not on the same level as Achilas Chametz. And therefore, the Mishnah wants to go out of its way to tell you that shows the Rabbanan, meaning that extra hour, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, 2 hours that we added. So whether it be after the sixth hour, which we call 11 a.m. according to Rabbi Meir, or after the fifth hour, which is 10 a.m. according to Rabbi Yehuda, at that point the shows the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan prohibited chametz before the Shas Isur. They extended the Shas Isur to Erev Pesach. How far did they go? Did they go as far as to say it's also b'hana? Or do they maybe make a separate Isur of Achilas Chometz? That's what the Mishnah wants to tell us, that Avar Zmano, Asur Bano, that in these hours, between, let's say, 10 a.m. and 12 p.m., that the Rabbanon instituted an Isur Chometz, that Gzera includes not just Achilas Chometz, but also what? Hana Mina Chometz. Okay. Now, so far, so good. That's the easy part. Now we get to the more complicated part. The Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav Chia Bar Yosef, Amar Rav Yochanan. Here's a long trail here. But it leads us back to Rav Yochanan. Hamakadesh Mishesh Shos Ulamala. Now you'll notice that I skipped three words because it's complicated enough without those three words. It becomes doubly complicated if you add those three words. So I figured if it's okay with the Olam, let me first try to get by what I think is relatively easy, even though this is not easy at all. Hamakadesh. What does a Makadesh mean?
Trust.
Excellent. He was Makadesh and Isha. Now, in order to be Makadesh and Isha, you have to give her something of value. Something that she could benefit from. So the man gave her a piece of pastry. That's an interesting new idea for marriage. He couldn't afford a ring, so instead he bought her, you know, my day, because I'm coming from Brooklyn, we say Chiffon's Bakery. You know, he went to the best bakery in town. You know, today I think in the Shuk, in Machne Yehuda, they have some really good bakeries. So if anybody's going there, please keep me in mind. I'll tell you exactly what to buy for me, because I never make it to the Shuk. So what happens? The man gives the woman chametz as kesef kedusha. But it's got to be valuable. It has to have a market value. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Mishay Shol Salamala. Now notice the emphasis here on Shay Shol Salamala. Shay Shol Salamala means from 11 a.m., not 12 p.m. The Torah prohibits chametz at 12 p.m. That's called achilek. But he's talking about giving this woman at 11. Again, the man has nothing better to do with his life than to marry a woman at 11 a.m. on Erev Pesach, right? And to boot, he gives her a piece of chametz on Erev Pesach. Very strange scenario. But you know, the halach has to take every possibility into consideration. So what would you say in this case? The Torah doesn't prohibit chametz until the end of the sixth hour, the beginning of the seventh hour. Achilek. He gave her chametz at the beginning of the sixth hour. Well, what's the status of chametz at the beginning of the sixth hour? It's also the Rabbanan. So what do you do in a case where you have something that the Torah says is valuable because it's not chametz, it's mutter. I mean, there's no chametz until noontime. But the Rabbanan say that it's chametz. And you're not allowed to benefit from it. Would that kedusha be valid? It's a very paradoxical situation because, you know, if I look at it on a Doraisa level, and we have to wonder whether this woman is an Eishes Ish Doraisa, if she's married, I don't have to tell you the repercussions. That means, number one, if she has a relationship with another man, it's a capital crime. Number two, it means that she can never marry a Kohen again. Number three, he's going to have to divorce her with a get. You know, if the marriage is valid. I mean, there are many, many amazing repercussions to whether we validate this marriage or not. And now the question is, he gave a chametz, but well, it's not really chametz because the Torah didn't recognize it as chametz. As far as the Torah is concerned, it's like a piece of matzah because Erev Pesach until Chatzos, there's no Isur chametz. But on a Derabbanan level, she's not married. So what would you say in this case? You know, should we go back to the Torah law? And since we're dealing with Doraisas here about whether she's an Eishes Ish, if somebody gives her real kedusha, or gives her a good, nice, beautiful ring, is that valid or not? Well, she's already married. So on the Torah level, she's already married because he gave her something of value. Because on a Torah level, she could take that chametz in the sixth hour and she could eat it. And that certainly is a valuable gift that you gave her.
Is that a patura, a dalas, or
Oh, so you could say that there's some sort of an Issa Drabbanan, but the question is, can an Issa Drabbanan take a woman who on a Daraisa level is married and say she's not married? And what it means she's not married means she can marry a Kohen, she can marry anyone else, she doesn't need a divorce. I mean, that has tremendous repercussions. And the Pella is, that's what's amazing, is Rav Gidol Amarav says, Ein Choshishin L'Kedushin. We don't even have to worry about this kedusha. You know, don't think that let's be machmir, maybe she is married, the Torah says it is a valid marriage, we have to recognize the Torah law. No. Even on a drabbanan level, we don't have to have any chashashot, no worries whatsoever. The kedusha is invalid, even though on a deraisa level it's not chametz, it's mutter. This chametz is worth a lot of money. But on the Drabbanan level, it's Asur, and therefore, there's no Kiddushin. Now tomorrow, B'Amir Hashem, I want to try to attack this, because as I told you, you need extra time for this. You really have to work overtime to figure out how the Rabbanan could make a Gzera on Chametz and institute an Isur Chametz in the sixth hour that would now undermine a Kiddushin, which the Torah validates, and therefore she's not married. Ein Choshishin L'Kiddushin. Once we end, if we get past that barrier, then we have to go back to the three words that I skipped and figure how that works out. And that's going to be, Mirtz Hashem, our goal for tomorrow. So I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day. And Mirtz Hashem.